Hello, everyone. Let's continue now with chapter 5, verse 1. Call now if there be any that will answer you, and to which of the saints will you turn? Go ahead, Job. Who's going to agree with you? Who are you going to look to now? Some friend, the way this man is talking. For wrath kills the foolish man, and envy slays the silly one. I have seen the foolish taking root, but suddenly I cursed his habitation. His children are far from safety, and they are crushed in the gate. Neither is there any to deliver them. Whose harvest the hungry eats up and takes it even out of the thorns, and the robber swallows up their substance. He's like a prosecuting attorney here that's building a case to convict Job and tell him, this has all come on you because of your fault, and I've seen all this before. And God would never do this to you, and he'd never allow anyone else to do it to you. So something must be wrong with you, Job. Verse 6, although affliction comes not forth of the dust, neither does trouble spring out of the ground, yet man is born in the trouble as the sparks fly upward. I would seek unto God, and unto God would I commit my cause, which doeth great things and unsearchable, marvelous things without number. He's telling him, you ought to repent, and you ought to seek God, and you ought to quit whining and feeling so sorry for yourself. But how did he know Job wasn't seeking God? How did he know that Job wasn't coming to the point of repenting? Job needed some comfort from his friend, some encouragement. And here he's being severely chastised and corrected and accused as if there's something going on here, Job. What are you hiding? What are you involved in? What wrongdoing have you been practicing to bring this on? If it were me, here's what I would do, and this is what you ought to do. Verse 8, I would seek unto God, and unto God would I commit my case, which does great things and unsearchable, marvelous things without number, and that's true, who gives rain upon the earth and sends waters upon the fields, to set up on high those that be low, that those which mourn may be exalted to safety. He disappoints the devices of the crafty, so that their hands cannot perform their enterprise. He takes the wise in their own craftiness, and the counsel of the forward is carried headlong. He's going to bless those that are obeying him, but he's going to punish those that aren't. So, Job, which category do you fit into? He takes the wise in their own craftiness, and the counsel of the froward is carried headlong. They meet with darkness in the daytime and grope in the noonday as in the night. And that's what Job was doing. So, therefore, you must be crafty. You must be froward. You must be doing something that's evil and wicked. And Job did have a problem. It was self-righteousness. But these friends weren't helping him with his problem. And they weren't really able to point out what his problem was. They were fishing. And in the process of fishing and accusing, they were heaping on Job even more problems than he already had. Some friend this man was, Eliphaz. They meet with darkness in the daytime and grope in the noonday as in the night, the evil people do. Verse 15. But he saves the poor from the sword, from their mouth, and from the hand of the mighty. So the poor has hope, and iniquity stops her mouth. Injustice stops her mouth. Behold, happy is the man whom God corrects. Therefore despise not thou the chastening of the Almighty. You're being corrected. What are you complaining about, Job? Okay, you might technically say that's an accurate statement. But it's a merciless statement. Yes, God chastens those that he loves, and he corrects them. But on the other hand, when we are being corrected, when we are being chastened, and when we do suffer, God is merciful. He's kind. He's compassionate. He won't put too much on us than what we're able to endure. And our friends help us as we go through those trials by being there for us and with us and encouraging us. And appreciating us and respecting us, not sitting there accusing us, pointing fingers at us, and lecturing us about how bad we are, or we wouldn't be going through this. Well, that's what these quote-unquote friends were doing to Job in his horrible state of misery and suffering. Verse 18, for he makes sore and binds up, he wounds, and his hands make whole. He shall deliver you in 6 troubles, yea, in 7 there shall no evil touch you. In famine he shall redeem you from death, and in war from the power of the sword. You shall be hid from the scourge of the tongue, neither shall you be afraid of destruction when it comes. At destruction and famine you shall laugh, neither shall you be afraid of the beasts of the earth. Verse 23, for you shall be in league with the stones of the field, and the beasts of the field shall be at peace with you. That's how you'll be if you serve God, Job. That's how your life will be if you handle this problem the way you ought to be handling instead of the way you're handling it. What's your problem? Snap out of it, buddy. Get with it. Well, where's the compassion? Where's the mercy? Where's the kindness? Where's the love and the deep feeling that ought to be there? Instead of all this hammering, hammering, hammering away that Eliphaz is doing with Job. And Job did have problems. And God was teaching him and helping him to see those problems and to overcome them and to repent of them, which he did later. But in the process of learning these lessons, Job didn't need his three friends to show up and make it even worse. And that's what they were doing by their words that just cut to the marrow. Verse 24, and you shall know that your tabernacle shall be in peace, and you shall visit your habitation and shall not sin. You shall know also that your seed shall be great, and your offspring as the grass of the earth. You shall come to your grave in a full age, like as a shock of corn comes in its season. Lo, this, we have searched it, so it is. Hear it and know it for your own good. Snap out of it, Job. This is the way it's all going to turn out if you'll just do what you ought to do, which you haven't been doing, or this never would have happened to you. So there, take that, Job. That's kind of the attitude you see here from his friend, who isn't really showing the kindness and the friendship and the compassion that would help Job. Chapter 6 and verse 1. Now, Job is being corrected by his three friends, and they have some things that might be accurate, but a lot of what they're saying is not, especially when they start talking about God. And so they will give their opinion on Job's plight as far as his terrible condition that he's in with boils from his head to his toe and so on. And then Job will answer them. And here we find in chapter 6 that Job is answering Eliphaz after Eliphaz had his say. So chapter 6 now of Job in verse 1. But Job answered and said, oh, that my grief were thoroughly weighed and my calamity laid in the balances together. Verse 3, for now it would be heavier than the sand of the sea, therefore my words are swallowed up. He's in such pain and such agony, he's saying that perhaps some of the things he says are rash or maybe should be left unsaid, but he's in such pain he's saying them. That's kind of what verse 3 is saying. My words are swallowed up, a better translation, have been rash. Verse 4, for the arrows of the Almighty are within me, the poison whereof drinketh up my spirit. The terrors of God do set themselves in array against me. And now let's go on to verse 5. Does the wild donkey bray when he has grass, or loweth the ox over his fodder? When he's being taken care of, he doesn't make noise, but when he's in big trouble, he does. And I'm in big trouble, so I'm making noise, Job is saying. Can that which is unsavory be eaten without salt, or is there any taste in the white of an egg? I'm in trouble here, and it's like being in trouble in other situations or even sitting down to eat and it not be that good. There's going to be some complaining, so I'm complaining. The things that my soul refuses to touch are as my sorrowful meat or loathsome food to me. Oh, that I may have my request and that God would grant me the thing I long for, even that it would please God to destroy me, that he would let loose his hand and cut me off. I wish he would just kill me and get me out of my misery. I can't go on living like this. Why is this happening? Job is saying. Then should I yet have comfort. Yea, I would harden myself in sorrow. Let him not spare, for I have not concealed the words of the Holy One. I've tried to do my best. I've taught the truth. I've honored him. Why is this happening to me? See, Job still doesn't see himself. That's the big problem that he's having to learn going through all of this. He's got to see himself and that he has a problem with self-righteousness, even though he has tremendous strengths as well. Verse 11, what is my strength that I should hope, and what is my end that I should prolong my life? What do I have to live for, he says? What do I have to live for? Is my strength the strength of stones, or is my flesh of brass? Is not my help in me, and is wisdom driven quite from me? What can be done here? What can I do? To him that is afflicted, pity should be showed from his friends. But he forsakes the fear of the Almighty. Why aren't you comforting me? Why aren't my friends? You're my friends. Why aren't you showing compassion and kindness? Why are you just dressing me down, so to speak? And why aren't you standing in awe of God and doing what he says you should do as you tell me what I should do? Verse 15, my brethren have dealt deceitfully as a brook, and as a stream of brooks they pass away. They don't want anything to do with me now that I'm in this terrible shape. Before, oh, they were friendly and they wanted whatever they could get from me. Now that I can't give them anything and need something from them, they won't have anything to do with me, even my brethren. My brethren have dealt deceitfully as a brook, and as a stream of brooks they pass away, which are blackish by reason of the ice, and wherein the snow is hid. What time they wax warm, they vanish. When it is hot, they are consumed out of their place. The paths of their way are turned aside. They go to nothing and perish. The troops of Tema looked. The companies of Sheba waited for them. They were confounded because they had hoped. They came there and were ashamed. For now you are nothing. You see my casting down and are afraid. All of these things seem to be normal and seem to be predictable and well organized, but now there's a disruption of the normal activities of caravans and commercial activity and friends and brethren coming to and fro and coming before me. They see my casting down and they're gone. They're afraid. They don't have anything to do with me. Verse 22. Did I say, bring unto me or give a reward for me of your substance? Have I ever asked for a bribe? Have I ever gone out of the way to deal underhandedly with anybody? Verse 23, or deliver me from the enemy's hand, or redeem me from the hand of the mighty? Teach me, and I will hold my tongue, and cause me to understand wherein I have erred. How forcible are right words, but what does your arguing reprove or accomplish? If you say the right thing, yes, very powerful and helpful. But you're not doing that. You just want to argue. You go back and forth and accuse, is what he's telling his friends. And he's right. Do you imagine to reprove words, or do you intend to reprove my words and the speeches of one that is desperate, which are as wind? Yea, you overwhelm the fatherless, and you dig a pit for your friend. Who are you to accuse me of all these bad things when you yourself are guilty of these bad things? So why are you accusing me what you're guilty of yourself? Now therefore, be content. Look upon me, for it is evident unto you if I lie. Take a look. Consider what I'm saying. Consider my pattern. Consider my actions. And you know that you'll see if I'm lying or not, and I'm not. Return, I pray you, let it not be iniquity. Yea, return again, and my righteousness is in it. My righteousness still stands. Is there iniquity in my tongue? Cannot my taste discern perverse things? And there we see, Job still has this problem. Verse 29, my righteousness is in it. It still stands. I still know what to say when it comes to right words. I still can discern evil and unsavory things. So who are you to sit there and accuse me? I'm right, and I'm righteous, and you're wrong. And you need to take care of your own business and quit accusing me of things that you're guilty of. And so his friends were trying to help him in one way, but they were jumping on him and piling on him in another way. And they were saying things and attributing them to God and weren't correct in that. And so Job now is battling back, and he's saying things he ought not be saying, talking about how he's so righteous and how, well, if he's so wrong, show me where I'm wrong and I'll change it, but I'm not wrong. He still hasn't seen himself. So it's quite a to-ing and fro-ing going on here. Job continues now in chapter 7, verse 1. Is there not an appointed time to man upon earth? Are not his days also like the days of a hireling? As a servant earnestly desiring the shadow, and as a hireling looks for the reward of his work, so am I made to possess months of vanity and wearisome nights are appointed to me. We only have so many days to live in this life. And in this life, we seek to accomplish things, but we also seek to have some comfort, to have a shadow, to avoid the heat, to have some shade. And we look for a reward for our work. And what am I doing? I'm sitting here month after month, living a life of just pure, plain agony and vanity, going nowhere, and I'm weary at night. And it's wearing me down. And so he continues to unload about the situation he's in. Verse 4, when I lie down, I say, when shall I arise and the night be gone? And I am full of tossings to and fro unto the dawning of the day. So during the daytime, I can't wait to lie down. And during night, I can't wait to get up. I'm just miserable all the time, Job is saying. And here's why, verse 5. My flesh is clothed or caked with worms and clods of dust. My skin is broken and cracked and become loathsome, breaks out afresh. What a pitiful, pathetic, painful, disgusting state he was in. And he hasn't been able to figure out why. And his friends are accusing him and trying to tell him why, as far as what they think is the reason. And it ends up quite often being just an accusation session instead of really a kind, comforting, helpful session from his supposed and so-called friends, which adds insult to injury as far as Job is concerned. Verse 6, my days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle and are spent without hope. I've lost all hope. Oh, remember that my life is wind. My eyes shall no more see good. I'm done for. I'm gone. It's finished. The eye of him that has seen me shall see me no more. Your eyes are upon me, and I am not. I will no longer be. You're seeing me now, but that won't be for very long. Verse 9, as the cloud is consumed and vanishes away, so he that goes down to the grave shall come up no more. Well, he will come up at the resurrection, but right now Job's not thinking about the resurrection. He's just thinking about what a miserable life he has, and when he goes to the grave, at least it'll be over, and that'll be the end of that, and I'm not going to have to put up with this anymore and come up and put up with it anymore. He shall return no more to his house, neither shall his place know him any more. No more life, no more involvement with family, no more engagement in producing things and meeting challenges. It's all over. It's done. It's finished. And that's where I'm headed. No hope is what he's saying here. Therefore, I will not refrain my mouth. I will speak in the anguish of my spirit. I will complain in the bitterness of my soul. I don't have that many days left. I'm just going to let it all hang out and say what I want to say. I'm bitter and I'm going to complain. I'm going to say it like it is. What have I got to lose? It's kind of his attitude. That's not a good attitude either. And he had to repent of that later, as we will see. Am I a sea or a whale that you set a watch over me? Why are you just sitting there gazing at me? You enjoying it? When I say my bed shall comfort me, my couch shall ease my complaints. Verse 14, then you scare me with dreams and terrify me through visions. Now he's talking about not getting any comfort from God. And he's wondering why God is watching all of this and not doing anything about it. And he's wondering why his friends are watching this and coming up with the wrong conclusion. And he's saying, when I go to bed and go to sleep, maybe I can have some peace. But no, I have dreams that terrify me. I have visions that frighten me. Verse 15, so that my soul chooses strangling and death rather than my life. There's no place I can go. There's nothing I can do. I'd rather have death than this. I loathe it. I would not live always. Let me alone, for my days are vanity. I don't want to just keep on living. I want it to be over and over now. What is man that you should magnify him and that you should set your heart upon him and that you should visit him every morning and try him every moment? What's it all about, God? What am I all about? What's this all about? What's going on? What's happening? Show me. I need to know. I can't see that I've done anything wrong. Verse 19, how long will you not depart from me, nor let me alone till I swallow down my spittle? He's wanting his friends to leave him alone, and he's hoping God will go ahead and just let him die and it'll be over. I have sinned. Well, that's not exactly a proper translation. If you check the original translation and other translations, it reads, if I have sinned. If I have sinned. Of course, he has sinned. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God. If I have sinned, not I have sinned, but rather if I have sinned. So there's the attitude problem again. If I have sinned, what shall I do unto you, O thou preserver of men? Why hast thou set me as a mark against you, or your target, so that I am a burden to myself or to you? Why has this happened, God? We've been in such a close relationship, and now it's like you're setting me up as a target. It's like you are turning against me. It's like you are punishing me, and I don't know why. Why have you set me as a mark against you? Verse 21, and why do you not pardon my transgression and take away my iniquity? For now shall I sleep in the dust, and you shall seek me in the morning, but I shall not be. If I've sinned, why not forgive me of my sins and pardon my iniquity and let me die in peace? Why put me through all of this? But of course, he has sinned and he doesn't see it yet and he hasn't repented yet and he hasn't changed yet. And so God is going to continue working with him, and it's going to be a very, very painful suffering experience because Job just isn't getting the point yet. And his three friends are making it even worse for him, and they're also digging a hole for themselves. Job chapter 8 and verse 1, here's another one of his friends stepping up to put in his 2 cents worth. Then answered Bildad the Shuhite and said, how long will you speak these things, and how long shall the words of your mouth be like a strong wind? You're just a big windbag, Job. Why are you shooting your mouth off like this? And to a degree, Job was out of line, but not to the point and not in the way that Bildad points out. And Bildad himself was a bit of a windbag. Does God pervert judgment, or does the Almighty pervert justice? We know he doesn't. So therefore, something must be wrong here, Job, and you must be guilty of a whole lot of things that you're not telling us about. If your children have sinned against him, and he has cast them away for their transgression, and Job did lose his children, and apparently they were sinning. And so if that's the case with them, it must be the case with you, Job, but you won't take a look at it. But see, they didn't really actually see Job's problem because they had the problem themselves, self-righteousness. But they're probing, and they're picking, and they're pushing, and they're accusing Job. Verse 5, if you would seek unto God betimes or earnestly, and make your supplication to the Almighty, if you were pure and upright, surely now he would awake for you and make the habitation of your righteousness prosperous. And that's correct if Job would do that. And he will do that later on, but he's not doing it now. But on the other hand, if you make such a pronouncement as that in a condescending, haughty manner, as if you are perfect and the person you are directing that to is miserable and pathetic, that's not going to be very comforting and effective to the person who's suffering. Verse 7, though your beginning was small, yet your latter end shall greatly increase. And actually, that's exactly what happened to Job, as we will see going on through to the end of this book. For inquire, I pray you, of the former age, and prepare yourself to the search of their fathers. For we are but of yesterday and know nothing, because our days upon earth are a shadow. Learn from the past. Do it while you have time, because we are here today and gone tomorrow. Don't waste time wallowing in your terrible plight and wallowing in self-pity. Some of the things Bildad said were correct when he was talking about Job and to Job, although maybe not in the kindest way. But then when he starts talking about God, some of the things he says about God, not right. And he had to be corrected for that particular problem later on, as we'll see. Verse 10, shall not they teach you and tell you and utter words out of their heart? So consider the past and consider what others have said and consider what God has said and learn. Verse 11, can the rush grow up without mire? Can the flag grow without water? They're going to have their habitat to flourish and thrive, and you're going to have a proper environment, a spiritual environment, to come out of the problem you're in here, Job. Verse 12, while it is yet in his greenness and not cut down, it withers before any other herb. So are the paths of all that forget God, and the hypocrite's hope shall perish. So you must have forgotten God, Job, and you're just a hypocrite, and that's why this is happening to you. So they knew something was wrong, But they didn't handle that properly, knowing something was wrong, and then they began to go in the wrong direction and trying to define and articulate what it was, and then they began to bring God into the picture and get that wrong. And so here Job's got a big problem. His family's turned on him. His wife told him, curse God and die. He's in utter and absolute pain and misery. His friends have turned on him and sat there and lecturing him, accusing him, and piling on. And it seems God has forsaken him. This man was in trouble. Most people would have just thrown up their hands and quit. And Job was almost on the verge of that. But he did not turn his back on God. And he did not accuse God. And he did not rebel against God. Through all of this, he did not. And so he patiently waited on God, but he did complain and cry out about the pain he was suffering. But he did not speak wrongly about God, and he did not rebel against God through all of this agony. And then when he finally learned his lesson, he repented of the problem he had. So this indeed is a tremendous individual, this man Job. But he had a self-righteous streak that was so strong and so entrenched, he had a hard time seeing it, and he went through a lot before he could see it, but he finally did see it, but not yet. Verse 13 again, so are the paths of all that forget God, and the hypocrite's hope shall perish, whose hope shall be cut off, and whose trust shall be a spider's web. There you see it, then you don't. He shall lean upon his house, but it shall not stand. He shall hold it fast, but it shall not endure. That's the way everybody's house and life is when we don't look to God and trust God and depend on God. We end up falling over, so to speak, and tumbling down. But Job was still looking to God. He was just confused. He was still trusting God. He was just in pain. And his friends weren't cutting him any slack on that point. Verse 16. He is green before the sun, and his branch shoots forth in his garden. His roots are wrapped around the heap, the rock heap, and seeks the place of stones. If he destroy him from his place, then it shall deny him, saying, I have not seen you. Once again, drawing an analogy about a human being's life and then a plant that thrives for a while and then wilts. And that's exactly what happens to an individual who doesn't seek God. He may look like he's thriving for a while, but then he will wilt and be gone. Verse 19, behold, this is the joy of his way, and out of the earth shall others grow. Behold, God will not cast away a perfect man, neither will he help the evildoers, till he fill your mouth with laughing and your lips with rejoicing. They that hate you shall be clothed with shame, and the dwelling place of the wicked shall come to naught. So Bildad is finishing up with some pretty strong words there, and he's saying, listen, if you repent and get it right, all this will be turned around, and your joy and happiness will return to you. So what's your problem, Job? Why are you not seeing where you need to change? Why are you not getting it right and getting it straight? Because if you do, this would happen. Yet Bildad didn't have some things right when he talked about God, and he didn't have it just right in terms of his attitude when he was trying to help Job see himself. That brings us to the end of chapter 8. Until next time, this is Charles Bryce with the Enduring Church of God.